We're pleased to partner again with the Allianz Richmond Marathon, which also features the CarMax Richmond Half Marathon and VCU Health Richmond 8K, all on November 16, 2024. These scenic races are known for their amazing course support and downhill finish. Use code AMR2VA for $10 off the full or half marathon at richmondmarathon.org. This episode is sponsored by Thorne Supplements to help promote and maintain your health goals. Go to thorne.fit/runner and use code RUNNER for 10% off your first order. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Thanks to Lagoon Sleep for sponsoring our show. Wherever you are in your running journey, rest and recovery are critical. For deep restorative sleep, switch to a performance pillow from Lagoon. Use the code AMR for 15% off your first purchase at lagoonsleep.com/AMR. Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I'm joined by Amanda Loudon. Hello, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
I am very good. I want to tell people that we are recording this on Wednesday, April 10. So you are fresh off of eclipse viewing.
I am. I grew up in Ohio near Cleveland, and my brother still lives there. He had an eclipse party. And his they have a home that's very wooded and on a little lake. And so it was an idyllic place to watch. And Ohio, that part of the northeastern Ohio, is often very, very cloudy. So I went in with kind of low expectations. But I tell you, the weather gods just, you know, cleared the clouds for the day and delivered a spectacular, perfect set of conditions for us. So we were able to get totality and honestly, it really exceeded my expectations.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I mean, the photos you sent me were just stunning. I mean, you sent me a photo of totality, and that was just mind-blowing. So did you feel it like throughout your body? Did you? It feels like a very life-changing kind of cosmic, pardon the pun, experience.
I think it was. The first thing we heard, and again, because we were sitting like amongst all these trees, is we could hear, you know, the birds all started chirping and really kind of like their chatter. I think it was kind of maybe their bedtime chatter that they would normally do, you know, it kind of really kicked off. So that was cool. And then, you know, as it got darker and darker, you know, the temperature dropped and it just got quiet. And then we're all there looking at it. And it was just really amazing.
And did it feel, I understand it went on for about 4 minutes, totality.
Yeah, something like that. I, being the chicken that I am, because you're allowed to take your glasses off during totality, I did it for a hot second.
Oh, stop it. Oh my gosh, Little Miss Rule follower.
I'm like, back on. So I did not want to become one of those people without eyesight. So after that, so yeah. So, but it, yeah. So it was about four, and then again, like the slow, you know, light returning kind of experience afterwards. So all told, I mean, it feels like it was about an hour. I don't know if that's right.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Oh, so I see. From when something up in the sky started happening until it was all over. Yeah. So, but did totality, which seemed to, I understand, last for 4 minutes, did that seem to go by in the blink of an eye? Or did you feel like you could kind of luxuriate in the moment?
Yeah, no, it felt like time kind of stood still for a bit there. Yeah.
Oh,
because everyone was just like, everyone was quiet and just, So,
I love that you watched it with a smaller group, because listening to news reports of people who are like, oh, I'm in a stadium with 15,000 people. I'm like, oh, I don't want that to be a big group event.
I agree. And I will say one other thing that happened along those lines is someone nearby somewhere shut off fireworks. And that was like really off-putting. I'm kind of like, come on, people, let's not spoil this special quiet moment, you know? That was a little bit of a shame, but that didn't last long, thankfully. So, but yeah, it was neat. It was a neat communal experience, but in a small group. Yeah, that much better.
Nice. And then, okay, the traffic.
Right. So I didn't have to go anywhere because I just stayed overnight after that and drove back first thing yesterday morning. So I avoided any snafus, and I'm grateful for that. Yeah.
Good. And how long is the drive to there?
5.5-6 hours, depending on the day and traffic. Yeah.
Okay. And you felt it was well worth it?
Yes, absolutely. I'm so glad. And in fact, I came back and I feel like I had a little letdown yesterday. Like it was weird.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Your post-eclipse blues. Uh-huh.
Yes. Kind of like post-marathon blues, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, you teed me up for that one, Amanda. Yeah, I did. You've done your job. Mic drop. You can leave now. Uh-huh. because Amanda, as you know, today we're talking about getting over a disappointing race. We're talking with three guests. First is Emily Saul, a sports psychology and performance coach with a practice called eSaul Movement. For the last decade, Emily has been co-leading the Boston branch of the free fitness movement called November Project. Emily was a Division I collegiate rower, and she coached strength and conditioning at Harvard for 7 years. She's an avid marathon runner on road and trail. After talking to Emily, we're going to talk to two quote-unquote regular mother runners who will share their stories of disappointing races that they ran recently. Emily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So I want to let folks know how I found you. Our mutual friend, Michael Goff, who I know from Colgate Rowing and you know through November Project, and who was a guest on our show last week, turned to you for encouragement and wisdom after his disappointing Marine Corps marathon last October when the extreme weather meant his race was cut short. He told me you gave him a great pep talk, and I knew I wanted to tap into your insight on our podcast. So that's what we're going to do.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
So, Emily, I was looking at your profile before we got on the recording, and I'm pretty sure that we have met at the Wilder Retreat in Maine a few years ago. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I was there. Lauren Fleshman had led several of the Wilder Retreats, mostly on the West Coast, and so I was really excited when she hosted one on the East Coast in Maine. And that was a really great time to explore running and writing and other women who love both of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really fun experience. So tell us a little bit about your athletic background and how you got into running marathons.
I always like to introduce my athletic background with just sort of the lifestyle that I grew up in. I'm from Minnesota originally, and so I grew up on a 10-acre farm with like lots of space and land outside to run around. And that was really my first introduction to what eventually became athletics. Like when it would rain, we would go outside and just run and run in the rain and get soaked.
I love that.
And climbing trees, things like that. And I certainly got into more organized sports in school. I did run track and I played soccer. And then when I went to my undergrad school at the University of Tulsa, I walked onto the rowing team. And my sister had been, my older sister had rowed at college. So the idea of rowing was something that was in my mind, but not something that I really understood from a personal perspective. But the opportunity to walk onto the team as a collegiate athlete, it happened to be a Division I school, and earn a spot on the team and earn a scholarship, which was just an advantage I wasn't even hoping for and didn't realize was an opportunity. It gave me such a great experience, really an education in sport and athletics and team and, you know, self that paralleled my education, my academic education. And so when I moved to Boston for grad school after undergrad, I had more, I did actually do a little bit of rowing while I first lived in Boston, but I just had much more access to running. And so that became something that I did as a regular part of my movement practice, along with very consistent strength training practice for a lot of years. and pursued more marathon running in the last, say, 10 or so years of my life. But the very first marathon that I ever did was the Disney World Marathon that I ran with my dad and my sister while we were on a family vacation in Disney in 2009. So, that's totally inaccurate. That was, it was 1999. 2001 is when I graduated. It was 1999 that I ran that marathon. And then I ran Boston the first time in 2009. So that's sort of how things began. And so I have pursued road marathons, and I've done a couple of trail marathons, and then just very recently kind of extended the distance of athletic adventures. I just did a rim-to-rim-to-rim hike in the Grand Canyon a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah.
Wow. So, and you also use your upper body and your full body. We know from a TED talk you did that you practice push-ups daily for 10 years. So you got to briefly tell us about that endeavor.
Sure. At this point, I think it's been 12 years. So I gave that TEDx talk a couple of years ago. But back in 2010, I began a practice of doing push-ups every single day. And the origin of it was not really about having some long-term practice of push-ups. It was more about recognizing a particular challenge that I was experiencing with traveling a whole lot for work and not really having the time or the space or the access to be able to do my typical movement practices of running and lifting weights. And so I was calculating in my head how I was going to navigate this almost full month of travel. And I put together the idea that I could always do body weight circuits in my hotel room. And I thought how awful that sounded because, you know, lots of push-ups are just really awful. And then, and that made me realize that if the only thing that I did was something like 100 push-ups, that would actually feel like a pretty legitimate effort. And so that sort of sparked the idea that what if I did 100 push-ups a day, every day for that month, and just wanted to see what would happen. And that happened, and it has evolved and developed, but I've really enjoyed the evolution of having this practice, the space in which push-ups are really the medium rather than the end point. It's a space to continue learning about myself and challenging myself in different ways. I've actually been exploring what I want to do or what sort of happens when I just trust and let my body do what it's feeling like doing in my push-up practice. And it's been a really interesting thing to just observe how there can be some ebbs and flows in a practice that still has consistency.
Wow.
Okay. So clearly your athletic background fed into your professional background, and sports psychology is your area of expertise.
Yeah.
We're talking about disappointing races today. So have you personally had a disappointing race? And if so, what approach did you take post-race?
I would say I probably have had more than one disappointing race, but the one that is coming to mind is I did run the Boston Marathon in both 2016 and 2017. And those 2 years happened to be quite warm. It was two back-to-back years that had almost exactly the same temperature, and it was challenging for everybody. And so the second year in particular, I had gone through all of the training and really kept telling myself it's got to be different, right? Like, it can't be the exact same 2 years in a row. Of course it can't. And so when it was, and I performed quite consistently with how I had the year before, and I was able to leverage some of the lessons that I had learned about how my body responds to running in what for me felt like too hot. how do I navigate the heat? But I think I had been really hoping for both a different outcome and also to some extent a different experience. I didn't want to do exactly the same thing that I had done before. And so both during it and after it, I really tried to just remind myself that this is its own unique experience. I had learned a lot about myself in that process both times, and that getting to the finish line of a marathon is a big deal, no matter what. Mm. And so I think that's the biggest part when I look at any race for myself or really for anyone else, when there are challenges that present themselves, and particularly when this is where I actually see in my work that most of the frustration and internal conflict comes up, because there's a mismatch between the expectation that I had for this race, either the experience or the outcome or both, didn't match what really happened. And it's the size of that discrepancy between the expectation and the actual experience that creates that sense of frustration or disappointment. And so when I or someone else is looking at what actually happened, and we're simply feeling that frustration or that disappointment, I find it mostly helpful to be able to look at two things. One is the expectation wasn't actually a real thing. It didn't exist, and I lost it or I missed it. Mm. The expectation was simply a framework of my focus that helped me to aim at it. But it is not a true loss of something that I held and then failed to hold on to. And then the second being that there, in every single experience that we have, there is valuable learning that comes from it. Mm. And so if I look at the process of training for and then running a race more as an experiment of learning, and this opportunity to gain new information rather than simply this expectation that I either succeed at or fail at, it just gives us a really different opportunity to do something with what just happened rather than feel like it was a waste or a loss.
Mm, I love that. I love that. So you talking about those two Bostons, I was there for 2016. Yeah. I know I ran it then, and it was like running through an oven with absolutely no air movement.
Right.
So, and then hearkening back again to our friend Michael at Marine Corps in October of 23. So what solace do you give runners when a race goes sideways because of weather conditions? You already talked about, some of the things, but I'd love for you to give a little more advice, because unfortunately it's becoming more and more common.
Yeah. Well, I'll start with this framework. A lot of times when people say, I'm going to run a marathon, simplistically, what they're expecting of themselves or the implicit expectation that gets built is, I'm going to go see how fast I can run a marathon. And on paper, that makes sense. A marathon is 26.2 miles. You're going to run from the start line to the finish line, and you're going to see how fast you can do it. But the reality of marathon running is that you're not actually going out to see how fast you can run a marathon. For all of the runners who are going to run Boston coming up this Monday, they are going to find out, they're testing out how fast they can run 26.2 miles on the Boston Marathon course in Boston on April 15th, 2024, with the weather that it's got and with the mix of other people who are going to be running there, under the conditions of their own training and in the context of how their body's doing in working through and adapting to the training that they've been doing. So there's actually a whole lot of layers of context that play into this idea of, I'm going to go see how fast I can run a marathon. And so, you know, in comparison, if somebody was truly, truly going to see how fast they can run a marathon, you would do it in a laboratory on a treadmill under incredibly controlled conditions. Mm-hmm. And so I try to help people sort of zoom out on this bigger perspective of what it means to be running a marathon, and how even if you ran Boston last year, and you're running Boston this year, you are not running the same race. You're not. Mm. you're not the same person. You cannot have had the exact same training. Mm-hmm. This year, you've got another year, another layer of what have you been doing in terms of your running or other fitness or other elements that influence your ability to adapt to that training cycle this year. There's other life events which might play into things. And so again, big picture, I just ask people to understand that each and every time you are running a marathon, you are in fact testing out how your body does running that distance on that course on that day in the context of the training that you've done. And that's a once in a lifetime experience. And so it doesn't serve us to compare to the past or even to set some really firm expectations about what you're supposed to be able to do, you know, in that kind of experience. And then also to just really take into account those layers of context that someone can say, I've had a really, really great training. And so like, it has to go well. And I go, well, it doesn't have to. Running isn't a meritocracy. You don't earn a good race by having a great, gosh, that would be great if it would. All the type A people would like totally succeed. But
it's so true.
But you might deserve it, but you certainly don't get to earn it, right? It's just, you know, I would say you deserve to have a great race, but so does everybody. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I really try to put that into perspective, that the weather is something that you can't control. It's going to be a factor in the same way that you don't have control over what the weather has been like through your training. There really just needs to be a practice of allowing, including in, accepting. You don't have to love it, but there's a certain factuality to the weather that exists. It just is. It is. And so understand that your body is going to respond in some ways that may not feel ideal, but they're going to make sense in the context of those conditions. And the more that we're able to look at our body's response to that, so going back to my hot Boston marathons, recognizing that my body really needed to slow down in order to keep my heart rate at a rate that felt doable. And that as soon as I started running hard enough that my heart rate got like too high and I couldn't keep myself cool and keep running, it didn't feel doable. But if I worked at a level of effort that kept my heart rate in a manageable space that I could still sort of feel like I had some access to cool my body and work at this, then I could continue. And ultimately, I get to choose to interpret that at the end of the day to say, I actually did the very best that I could that day. It did not necessarily match the time that my training might have projected. However, we're not doing this under laboratory conditions. So we have to take it, take those results in the context of those conditions as well.
So that is all fabulous advice for ways for people to look at everything post-race. But if you're in the middle of a race and you recognize, you know, it's not going to be my day, are there kind of some steps that you can start putting into practice in that moment to kind of lessen your post-race disappointment?
Yeah. Yes, the answer is yes. And I would actually say that process starts before the race happens. So one of the things that I ask people to do, especially if I'm talking with them ahead of time and they say, well, I've got this really big goal and it really means a lot and I have to do it. And oftentimes it is based on time because the culture of running tells us that the only things that matter are distance and time. And so the faster you run, the better you are. And the longer you run, the better you are, which I disagree with both of those things. But that's really what the culture of running says. So most people do come to a sense of a goal from a perspective of here's a time that I want to achieve as an outcome. And the first thing that I ask people to do is to talk about that time and help me understand what it is that means to them. So what does that time represent? As in, if you finish in that time, what will that mean about you? Some people have a sense that if I can do that, it'll change something, like that'll officially make me a real runner. or, you know, I'll feel fast or I'll feel accomplished. And really what I'm looking for is I'm looking to understand what that time represents, because there's a sense of meaning and purpose that is much deeper. It's much more like significant. It's sort of like graspable. Whereas a time actually is arbitrary. The fact that we look at those round numbers, like I want to go sub 4 or go sub 3, we just pick that because it feels neat. Mm-hmm. You know, people care about a BQ time because there's, you know, Boston qualifying time, because there's some sense of prestige or status or success that comes with achieving that kind of time. But really, that just comes down to some relatively arbitrary decision that's based on how many people can the BAA have on the course in a day and complete the event in the time that's needed, given how many towns and cities need to be involved in it. So then you divide that by how many people are going to enter, and then that's how you get the selection standards. And I think that's a really bad way to decide whether you're a good person or not. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If we get to the root of why that matters to you, why that goal time matters to you, and we expand our understanding of that, then we think about what are other ways that we can focus on and experience that sense of meaning other than just that time. So, for example, a lot of people really care about feeling like they've worked hard. And they choose that time is going to represent, if I can run that time, I must have worked hard. And I would argue that there are lots of other ways to determine or define or measure that you've worked hard than just the time. Mm-hmm. And you also have this advantage of being able to experience that metric, that measuring of working hard along the way, which gives you then frequent reinforcement that you're doing it, that you're actually doing it along the way, rather than just going, am I doing it? I don't know. Am I doing it? I'm not sure. I'll see at the end, but I don't know. And building anxiety as you work through, rather than building confidence as you work through the race. So I ask people to break down the goal so that we can find better and more ways of assessing whether you're actually working toward that goal along the way. And then I ask people to come up with, like, what are the other things that also matter to you? And a good example of that is that a lot of people feel good in their running when they are able to kind of adapt to unexpected things that happen. A lot of people tend to be really rigid and uptight. And when something happens that is not the way that they expect, it sort of feels like everything's falling apart. And so, Amanda, you asked, like, if I'm in the race and I look at my time or my pace and I feel like this just isn't going my way today, like, what do I do? And my whole point is, let's not think about it that way. Mm-hmm. Let's look at other things that really matter to you that are in your realm of influence. And that say that is one of those unexpected things. I look down at my watch and I realize that the pace I've been running, if I do the math in my head and I calculate, like, I can't make up for it. And so I'm not going to hit that goal. And I may decide as a runner that I don't want to have the experience of feeling like things are falling apart. And so that actually might be one of my metrics of success for this race, that no matter what happens in this race, whether it's my time being off or I drop my gel or someone runs in front of me and I trip over them or it just feels really hard, I want to be able to respond to those in a way that makes me feel like I can see that that's happening. I know that that's not the end of the world. I know that I've got choices about what I can do, and I'm capable of making the best decision for me right now. Mm-hmm. And that alone may be a metric or a measure of success that I choose to focus on. And when I get to the end of that race, I may have a slower time because of those unexpected things, but I'm also going to be able to look at that and go, okay, so my time was this. That's really a fact. That's just a piece of information. But when I look at these other things, how did I do responding to those unexpected things? I nailed that. Man, 10 of them happened and I found every single one and I made the choices and I took the next step and I continued on. Okay, that feels really, really good. You know, they're just become these like broad opportunities to feel a sense of success, but really to feel like you're working on things than just trying to run faster. I think running is much more than how fast we can run. I think it's a space where we get to learn about ourselves and work on things that are meaningful to us. And so that that sort of scope of what do you do during, going back to what do you do ahead of time, it's give yourself the opportunity to decide that there can be a time goal, but there's also other things that matter to you. So those things are meaningful. They're within your realm of influence. So all of those things I just gave as an example, like focusing on working hard, I'm the only one who's in charge of that, right? That doesn't get determined by the weather or anyone else. So by having those elements that are within your realm of control or influence that matter to you and that you can work on throughout, that you get that loop of feedback that says, I am doing it. Oh, look, I did that. This is happening. I am doing it. It makes it much, much easier to then continue on regardless of what's happening with the time, because that is so influenced by the other things that are out of our control that day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that is an excellent message to end on. Thank you so much for talking with us, Emily. This was really interesting.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a quick break to hear from some supporting sponsors. When we return, we'll talk with two gals who recently had disappointing races. Stay with us. Daydreaming about fall marathon? We're pleased to partner with the Allianz Richmond Marathon, CarMax Richmond Half Marathon, and VCU Health Richmond 8K, all held in 2024 on Saturday, November 16. One of the many reasons these Richmond races are perfect for so many folks is Richmond is within just one day's drive for 50% of the U.S. population. Who knew? Once there, you can get pretty much anywhere in 20 minutes. It's one of the things that makes the course so spectator-friendly. Richmond's 26.2-miler is dubbed America's Friendliest Marathon, thanks to its many enthusiastic volunteers and spectators. Each of the scenic courses showcases some of the city's favorite attributes: street art, river views, historic architecture, and beautiful parks. The race routes treat runners to a unique and unforgettable tour of Virginia's capital that ends with a renowned downhill finish and riverfront post-race party, complete with local craft beer and pizza. Mm-mm. And swag alert, full and half marathon participants get a long sleeve technical shirt, a hat, a finisher's medal, and the race's famous fleece finisher blanket. For all the race details, course map, and to register, go to richmondmarathon.org. Use code AMR2VA for $10 off the half or full marathon. Again, go to richmondmarathon.org and use code AMR2VA for $10 off the half or full marathon. That code again, AMR, the numeral 2VA. AMR2VA at richmondmarathon.org. Get 10% off your first Thorn order by going to thorn.fit/runner and use code RUNNER. Looking after my health means being mindful of what I put in my body. From fresh foods to supplements, I'm always trying to find the best option, which is why I'm so excited to tell you all about Thorn. Thorn takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness. Thorn teams up with leading medical professionals to bring you highly effective nutritional supplements. Thorn manufactures all their supplements in the U.S. using top-notch ingredients sourced globally. Whether it's their B-complex, creatine, magnesium citrate, or women's multivitamin for us 50-plus gals, Thorn's got all the supplements needed to help promote and maintain health goals. Thorn is trusted by more than 5 million customers, many pro athletes, more than 100 pro sports teams, and multiple U.S. national teams. When I first heard about Thorn, I texted Coach Liz for her opinion, since I know she pays close attention to supplements. She replied immediately, "Thorn is the gold standard of supplements." Ever since recent podcast guest Dr. Stacey Sims emphasized the power of creatine for active women, I've wanted to start taking it. So now I add a small scoop of Thorne creatine in my pre-workout beverage. I've been feeling great post-workout, and I do seem to be able to remember things better. Give your body what it needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/runner and use code RUNNER for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/runner with code RUNNER for 10% off your first order. thorne.fit/runner, code RUNNER. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. For 15% off your first Lagoon Sleep purchase, use code AMR at lagoonsleep.com/AMR. One of the best ways to set yourself up for success in training, races, and life is getting ample rest and recovery. The number one most effective form of recovery is optimal sleep. I recently started sleeping more soundly and waking feeling more refreshed thanks to a new pillow. It's by Lagoon, founded by a Minnesota husband and wife team who are lifelong athletes and new first-time parents, and they were in search of better sleep. Lagoon makes premium performance pillows with athletes in mind. There are 7 pillow styles to choose from, with an easy 2-minute quiz to learn your perfect pillow for sliding effortlessly into deep, restorative sleep. My perfect pillow? The Otter, which is fully adjustable, meaning you can remove fill to make the height just right for your personal neck and back alignment. I remove some fill to let my neck relax better as I sleep. Since sleeping on my Lagoon pillow, I fall asleep faster, wake up less frequently during the night, and wake feeling more well-rested. If you're looking for hard data, I've got some for you. Ruth Atkinson, a running coach and marathoner based in Texas, saw her REM sleep surge by a staggering 17% and her deep sleep rocket by 62% within the first 2 weeks of using her Lagoon pillow. Then there's U.S. Olympic Trials Marathon qualifier Caitlin Keene, who saw her deep restorative sleep increase by 52 minutes when she started using the Fox pillow from Lagoon. Sleep more soundly and wake more refreshed with the perfect Lagoon pillow for you. Go to lagoonsleep.com/AMR and take their awesome 2-minute sleep quiz to find your match. Then use code AMR for 15% off your first purchase. That's lagoonsleep.com/AMR with code AMR for 15% off your first purchase. lagoonsleep.com/AMR with code AMR for 15% off your first purchase. Next up, another Emily. This time it's Emily Menzel, a mom of 2 young boys who lives in Montgomery, Alabama. Emily, like our next guest, is a brand ambassador for Another Mother Runner. Professionally, Emily is an adjunct professor in social work. Her disappointing race was the 2023 Birmingham Marathon held last October. So thanks for joining us, Emily.
You're welcome. It's good to be here.
So Emily, we always start by asking about your running background. So give us a picture of that.
I started running when I got to Boston for grad school. I was never a runner before that, but got there for grad school a little bit early to start a job. Gym memberships were a little too expensive, and I saw everybody running on the Charles, so figured running is a cheap sport. Joke is on me. And started running. And so I would say that was my intro to running, was just kind of needing something to get me through the summer vacation until I started grad school. And I ended up running my first half that fall, and the rest is history. And that was in 2011.
All right. Very nice. And so I know we're going to be talking about the 2023 Birmingham Marathon. Had you run other marathons prior to that?
Yeah. So that was actually my 7th marathon. We are a military family. So I've set a goal to run at least one marathon everywhere we live.
I love that goal. I love how people kind of parse and slice and dice, you know, so that you got the 50 staters, that whole thing. But I've never heard anyone wanting to run a marathon. So you're saying where you're stationed, or when you are stationed somewhere, you want to run a marathon within that time frame?
Ooh, that's a good question. Mm. That kind of leads into this disappointing race. So I guess now I have put more rules into it. So I guess it is where we live, either the state or country.
Okay.
Yes, but I'm sure this will come up again as we talk about the disappointing race.
Okay.
So I set that parameter for myself. last October.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. So from what you've told me, you had two forces working against you in that Birmingham race. You had unexpected hills and heat, which is the nemesis that is running throughout this podcast, if people can't tell. So tell us about that Birmingham race, and when did you know it wasn't going to go as you planned?
Yeah, so that race was in October, which obviously in the South, any kind of weather could happen. The race description said rolling hills. I was minorly unprepared for rolling hills, but thought I could kind of pull through with adrenaline. Around mile five, I realized it was not rolling hills, but was doing okay. And it wasn't until between mile 9 and 10, I just hit a mountain of a hill and decided there was no way I could run out of it at marathon pace. And that was kind of when I just decided this was going to be a survive till the end race.
And then the heat, what tell us about that?
Yeah. So it was actually the same day as Twin Cities when it was canceled.
South of the Twin Cities, Birmingham. I do know my geography a little bit.
Very much. I didn't know until I finished that Twin Cities had even been canceled. Just kind of being in race mindset, I was not checking anything, no social media before the race. It wasn't until I finished that my co-mentor for your guys's Better Together program messaged me and said, Twin Cities was canceled and you had hotter weather. Granted, down in Alabama, we had some heat training leading up to it. But yeah, it was hot. It was 85 degrees. It was humid. It was sunny. I would say the last 6 miles was kind of through parking lots. So there was no shade. Yeah. And it was a later start time than I would think for an Alabama race. It was an 8 a.m. start for a full. Where I had been training with 4:30 a.m. runs. So, you know, for me, I've ran in the dark. It was still hot and humid, but you didn't have the sun. So it was just a lot of forces.
So going back to those hills, my heart really went out to you, because when I did Nike Women's Marathon in 2007, you know, which is the thing that kicked off another mother runner, it's in San Francisco. Hello, there are hills in San Francisco. But for some reason, I just was like, okay, if my coach told me to go out and hit a number, I knew I could hit that number if I was running on flats. So I would do those workout on flats. So really not a smart move. And then of course, like you were saying, how you realized, well, I can't hold my pace up this hill. You know, I was acutely aware of that during Nike Women's. So what, if any, hill training did you do? And, you know, in your training, were you able to maintain your desired pace on hills?
So no, I did not have very many hills in my training. So it was also a chaotic summer. We moved from Copenhagen to Montgomery. So there was a big move. My training started the day we flew back to the United States from Copenhagen. So, you know, nothing like adding a little extra. So I was running in our neighborhood. I didn't really know the area very well. Hills, I would have some rolling hills in my training, but definitely not hills that would have prepared me at all for what I was getting into. So I was very unprepared.
So before the podcast, you told Sarah you felt like you had to get over two disappointments. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah. So I had to get over the disappointment of not hitting a goal that I had told people, you know, I had a certain time goal, which maybe you should call those closer. I don't know. But I did not hit the time goal, but I also had friends who came to watch me. So friends who came to cheer and support, and I felt I was disappointing them by not running the whole race. Cause after mile 9 to 10, any hill, I just had to walk up. It was kind of that, just kind of to save my own energy and knowing with the heat. And then around mile 23, I just felt really lightheaded. So knew I just had to kind of walk. So there was no heat incidents. So I felt embarrassed or like I was letting them down, that I wasn't, you know, they had been supporting me through this training and then I wasn't performing how I thought I should perform for them. And I also had to let go of that time goal.
Yeah, that is, do we think all genders hold on to that sense of letting other people down? Or do we think that is something us mother runners really have the, you know, capitalize on it? I don't know. Because hearing you say that, I just was like, oh my gosh, how many times have I been in a race and even just thought about the larger another mother runner community and thought about letting them down? It's like, come on. Like, I don't know. So that said, though, I am an upbeat optimist to my core. And one of my superpowers is finding a positive in every race. Like when I missed my time goal at Big Sur Marathon in 2010, I missed it by about 90 seconds on yet again, an overly warm, brightly sunny day. And
those get you.
Yeah. Yeah. And particularly when you're along the Pacific Ocean, it's not what you expect. So I was just all sorts of proud about how strong I stayed in the second half of that race. So from what you shared with me ahead of time, Emily, it sounds like you were able to have some positive takeaways from your marathon. So could you share those with us, please?
Yeah. So my husband and my two boys were also there. The thought never really occurred to me that I was letting them down. It was more my peers, you know, my girlfriends who I do strength training with. But, you know, I was able to show my boys that you can do hard things. So especially my oldest son, who's 5, he noted around mile 23 when they saw me that I was not happy, that I didn't look like I was having fun, is what he told my husband. And my husband told him I was not. He validated that observation. But then my boys got to see me come into the finish shoot. It was the first time they really got to watch me, I think, finish a race. They've been around the finish line, but not visually watching me go through. And then they got to see, you know, I had a girlfriend who came and gave me a hug, even though I was drenched in sweat and all the things. And they got to see that. And then on the drive home later, we got to talk about how you can do hard things and that we don't quit things that we start. So I felt like it was a really good learning moment for my boys and, you know, my girlfriends who are not runners. They were just amazed that I still finished, that I pushed through, and like their words of affirmation, encouragement when I finished, really, it just felt good. It was, you know, all the guilt and all the shame I kind of felt for a long time on the course all kind of was washed away. And then they were, you know, I do strength workouts with them during the week, and they were telling the other ladies that we work out with about it and just the perseverance. So I think it's a good thing. And it was good for me to say, you don't always have to have the A goal.
It sounds like you moved on pretty quickly. Was there anything else that helped you do that?
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier that I was a mentor for the Better Together program, the race that went and ran in Indy. That was 3 weeks later. Sadly, my mentee was injured and decided not to run the race. So she deferred and I got to run by myself. So I got to go up there and run my own race. I offered out to the community, does anybody need somebody to pace them? You know, any mentors not going, kind of see what was needed. Didn't hear anything. And then I was also encouraged by Stacey Johnson and Coach Amy to just run my own personal race to kind of redeem Birmingham. And so I was able to go and run that and have a PR in the half, which was really exciting because I had ran the same time for 3 half marathons in a row.
That's great. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, how's that for consistency to run the same
time?
So do you have any lessons that you learned from the Birmingham race that you're carrying with you into races today?
Yeah, I think it's trusting my gut. So like I said, I knew I kind of had, I had the race coming up in 3 weeks, and I had the thought process going into Birmingham, should I just run the half at Birmingham and run the full in Indy? Would that have been a smarter choice for me? But then I had the weird rules that my husband really called me out on, saying like, you trained in Alabama, it counts. You don't have to run it in Alabama. And so I think what I took with me is trusting my gut. If a race does not seem like it's going to be great conditions and I have the flexibility or a race that's later on the calendar that I could change, to trust my gut in that, I think it would have been a better experience to run the half in Birmingham and then go to Indy where it was 50 degrees and run the full there.
Okay, so then, so your new rules, just so we circle back, we close the loop, so now it is run, tell us what your goal is for these, for your for the deployments or the stationings.
Yeah, the different assignments. I don't know if I have a hard and fast rule yet. we are, again, moving this summer, and we're going to a more temperate climate. We're going back overseas, where I don't have to worry about heat as much for
famous last words
there.
Emily.
I know, I just jinxed it, right? But yeah, so I guess kind of looking back at it, and I don't know why I've set this rule for this one, like when we lived in Germany, I ran the Athens Marathon. So obviously I didn't run it in Germany. Mm-hmm. So I think it is train for a marathon and run a marathon every assignment that's okay. In the geographic region.
Okay. All right. We will
and
codify
now it's on
those.
Record.
Yes, we will codify those rules. We will get them notarized. they will be entered into the public record. All right. It's been great talking with you, Emily. Thank you so much. And good luck with your future races and that move this summer.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk with you too.
Our final guest is Kara Brown from Wayland, Massachusetts. Kara is the mother of two and an attorney. She's general counsel for a private equity real estate firm. Kara's disappointing race was, like everybody else's, last October at the Indianapolis Marathon, where she was trying to run fast enough to qualify for Boston. So thanks for joining us and talking with us, Kara.
Thrilled to be here. Thank you.
So Kara, tell us a little bit about your running background.
Sure. Well, like many of your other guests, I hated running as a kid. I tried to avoid it as much as I could. But then right before I went away to college, my best friend at the time said, why don't we start running so we don't gain the freshman 15? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a great idea. So the running was a little sporadic at first. And then I moved to New York City for law school and did a race in Central Park and just fell in love. So I've been racing ever since, been pretty active in the running community. I am a certified coach through the RRCA. I'm also part of the first ever women's track club here in Boston called Liberty Athletic. So running has become a big part of my life ever since.
Nice.
Oh, that's really cool. So we know you ran Indy in the fall. And what number marathon was that for you?
That was my number 6.
Okay.
Okay. So take us through what happened there in Indianapolis.
Sure. Well, I had been really pleased with the progress I saw through my marathons and other racing, through getting more serious about running. I saw a lot of improvement and I thought a BQ could be possible. Prior to Indianapolis, my PR had been 3:55 in Chicago in 2018 in some pouring rain. So I thought, okay, there's some potential there. I needed to get to 3:50, of course, with some buffer because of the way the Boston Marathon selection process works. But I thought this could happen. So I was really excited to give it a try. And I originally picked Indy because of its flat profile and because of the time of year, which was ideal for my purposes and for weather. And then I saw that Better Together was doing Indy as well. So I joined up with that group and that was a very positive experience. I really enjoyed being a mentor. And I also used the AMR Obliterate program, which I had used in 2021 for Philadelphia. And I love that program. It makes me feel so strong when I'm in it. I love the structure of it. It just makes me feel like I've accomplished things that I couldn't, you know, before that. So, you know, the training went really well and I was very excited to see what the possibility was in Indy.
Mm. Did you do any mental training leading up to the race?
I do really enjoy sports psychology. I have a son who's a hockey and lacrosse goalie and a daughter who's a softball pitcher. So, you know, I think psychology is
high
really important.
Positions, yes.
Especially, yeah, exactly. And you have to be able to bounce back and, you know, kind of look at each opportunity as a new one and kind of forget what's happened right before it. So I have read a lot of books about sports psychology. I've actually talked to a sports psychologist who was amazing. I actually talked to her about my tennis game. So I think there's a lot there. And I felt ready on that front going in. I felt like I knew the techniques and kind of the way to talk to myself and how to think about things. But then I have to say, you know, as we get into talking about how the race didn't go as well as I wanted it to, a lot of that kind of fell apart in the moment, which was really hard for me because I had put in all that effort, that studying, and felt ready, you know, up until that point.
So, you know, end the suspense. Tell us what happened in the race, you know, what fell apart, you know, where'd the wheels come off?
Well, I had to travel, of course, from Boston to Indy, and that was the Friday before the race, which was actually on a Saturday, which makes it also a great race in my mind. And right at the airport, I had an issue where I might not have my driver's license on me. And it was sort of a stressful moment and I kind of felt rattled. And I don't know if I ever really regrouped after that. But I traveled with my family. My husband was actually doing the race as well, although we had talked in advance and he was going to do his own thing because he doesn't take it as seriously as I do. But in the race itself, I hadn't warmed up to my full kind of training plan desire. I kind of just was in the moment, like trying to be racing to the start line and kind of just focused on other things. And I just kind of felt off. You always do. There's always anxiety, but it felt a little bit different. But as the race got started, you know, the weather was ideal. You know, the course support was amazing. The community part was great. At mile three, and I had been warned about this, the GPS can go out because there are, I think, particularly tall buildings around that point. But I had had a pacing plan. You know, I'd done one of those bracelets online and I knew what I wanted to do. It was a conservative start. I think mile three was more fast than I wanted it to be. And I kind of had that in my head. I was able to kind of get back to where I needed to be. But I felt very tense. At mile 13, I felt like everything locked up, which was earlier in the race than I've ever kind of had that before. One of the reasons I think could have been at play was I wore a Camelback, a water backpack, and that's because Indy allows it. It's a smaller race, so they're more friendly to that sort of thing. And I thought, well, I've done this in all my training. Why not save some time at the water stations? And I don't know if that was actually a good idea because I think my arms tensed up. And I remember thinking to myself, how am I going to swing my arms for 13 more miles and through this? You know, yeah. So like mentally, I was on the decline and everything just felt like it got harder. And I pushed through. I kept running. I didn't let myself stop, which I think was being too hard on myself. There was actually a woman who was running really close by me towards the end, and she would do a run walk. And I remember thinking, I should do that. But I just wouldn't let myself. I feel like I had put too much pressure on myself, and I just kind of had to stay with what I was doing. And so, you know, end of the race went well. I ended up with a 3:52, a PR. So, you know, that in and of itself should be something I was really excited about. But because I was over the time I needed for my BQ, I had this, you know, sad feeling. I was able to kind of marshal through it. You know, my kids were there, my husband did well, and I was able to get through the weekend, but it was like this sadness that kind of hung with me for a little while afterwards, because I was disappointed about the BQ.
Yeah. You mentioned you were beforehand, you mentioned you were upset for weeks about that, even though, again, congrats on that PR. That's amazing.
Thank you.
So how did you process your emotions and disappointment?
You know, it's probably one of those instances where we all kind of feel this way from time to time where, you know, like in the grand scheme of things, you shouldn't be sad, or like what you're going through isn't as bad as someone else's predicament, but you still kind of feel like that just sadness and that longing for something that didn't happen the way you wanted it to. So that's exactly where I was. You know, I had to tell all these great people in my life who were super supportive that I didn't get my goal. My running crew had sent me there with like some baskets and socks and cards and things. And they were like, don't open this until after the race. And some of it was BQ oriented, which was so sweet of them. But, you know, it kind of like, you know, it was hard in the moment. And I felt like even work-wise, I was a little bit off because that just disappointment was with me. But in terms of processing, I certainly relied on my friends and my running crew. Sarah, I know you talk about this, but, you know, I use a therapist, and I think that was helpful for this, among, you know, many other things. And I was able to kind of talk it out in a neutral environment. Good. You know, I have an executive coach for work, so she was very helpful. And I feel like I really had to draw on my network and really just let time elapse. And I think, you know, one of the other things that really helped me get through it is an eventual decision, which was kind of in the moment, but really showed itself even more over time. And that was, I'm not going to let this go. I'm going to try again, you know, and that feeling like, okay, it's not over, you know, that was helpful to me. So I'm trying again in December at the California International Marathon.
Excellent. Do you feel like your family and friends understood why you were upset?
I think that it's hard for people to really understand unless they actually, you know, kind of train for these endurance events and kind of put themselves through it themselves. Yeah. So I think those who have run a marathon or who've done more than one, they understood better than everybody else. I think a lot of people cared and showed, you know, their concern and appreciation for what I was going through. But I think it's really the people who have put in the effort like you have and kind of gotten to that point who really understand. And that's a small universe.
But I almost think you had it tougher because you are in that running club. You know, it's in Boston. Oh my gosh, they all know what the Boston Marathon is, and you're a coach. So I hate to say it, but if you were just, you know, in a sphere where you were one of like three runners in your whole town, people would be like, I don't understand why she's so upset and just move on. You know, so I sort of think you were in a little tougher environment. You know,
yes,
yeah,
yes,
yeah. So, okay, so you mentioned you're going to try again at California International Marathon in December. So what do you anticipate doing differently in training and in that race?
Sure. I did join the running club earlier this year in January. So it is a new thing in my life.
Okay.
But you're right about the Boston pressure, even regardless.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But so I've really upped my game in terms of how I'm kind of training more. The coach of our Liberty Athletic Group, I'm going to ask him, he hasn't been told this yet, but I'm going to ask him if he'll coach me for the actual marathon. Uh-huh. I think he'd be great. And, you know, coaches need coaches. And so for someone to kind of look at what I'm doing and kind of give that advice from the outside will be good. And I think I'm going to try to enjoy it a little bit more, you know, not put as much pressure on myself, aim for the BQ. I don't want to let that go. And I really want to show my kids that I'm resilient and they can be resilient and, you know, goals can be achieved. But if it's not lucky number 7, it'll be the next one. You know, one of the silver linings about aging is that your BQ time goes up. So I'll just, you know, keep at it and eventually, you know, the stars will align. But I'm definitely willing to put in the effort again and give it a try.
I hate to tell you, though, the times, yes, they do get more lenient, but you do this slowing down thing as you age.
Yes, I've heard that. I'm starting to see maybe a little of,
Yes, young grasshopper. You won't. Yeah. Oh, goodness. All right. Well, thank you for being so candid with us, Kara, and we wish you all the best in your training and in that race in December. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Sarah and Amanda. It's been a pleasure.
So Amanda, did this call to mind any disappointing races you've had?
Oh, for sure. I definitely had a streak of disappointing marathons, where I was really gunning for a particular time, you know? And so it brought back a lot of memories. I was also thinking about the fact that if there's any distance, I mean, the marathon just more than any other has the ability to disappoint because you just invest so much into it. And it's not like you could go back out and, you know, run another one a week later if you so desired, but you know, your best shot is that particular goal race. Mm-hmm. And, there's just so much that goes into it. So I think it's unique in the disappointment it can dole out.
It sure is. Oh my goodness. All right. Well, there is no disappointing waiting for you in Lake Placid, New York in September, where we're having our retreat, our annual running retreat, where we convene for 4 days, 3 nights, a whole bunch of women runners from all different parts of the country. And we run together and have expert sessions, great meals. Our host hotel is right on Mirror Lake, which is a boat-free lake there in the center of Lake Placid. I know you've been there a lot, Amanda, and you love it as much as I do.
Yes.
It's great. And the retreat is September 6 to 9, so it's still early enough in the season of the fall. It's still late summer, actually. So I anticipate being able to swim in that lake for people who are up for it. And it's just a great time, great way to go with friends or make new friends. I mean, there are lifelong friendships that come out of our retreats. So please give it some consideration. Also, I want to remind people it's easy peasy to pay for the retreat in installments on our site using Affirm. So for all the details and to register, go to anothermotherrunner.com, click on events, and there in the drop-down menu, you're going to see Lake Placid. Again, anothermotherrunner.com. Our podcast today was produced in St. Paul, Minnesota by Barry Madure from Fire on the Bluff. Just follow along. You'll be okay. just keep up, Amanda. Just try to keep up.
I'll do my best.
Hey, wait for me, Amanda.